Okay, good afternoon. I'll call to order the State Government Budget Division for Wednesday, March 10, 2010. We do have a quorum. And the first item on our agenda is Senate File 2750, Senator Bonhoff. Welcome to the Budget Division.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm here today, along with my esteemed testifiers, who I will call up in just a moment, to talk about a constitutional amendment for technology bonding. Over the past many years, we have identified ways that we know the state must go. We have said that we need to re-engineer the way we deliver services. We have said that there are tremendous strides we could make in education if there was a level playing field, if all school districts had equal access to the kind of technology that some districts find they have available to them. And yet, there never seems to be the political will to invest in technology to the level of need. And so, for example, just this session, we were looking at, could we include in my cooperative facilities bonding bill, and this bill was about trying to incentivize school districts, counties, and townships to work together to do shared services. Could we include in that provision the ability to bond for technology infrastructure? We got a legal opinion back that said the way that it is stated right now, no, we could not, that you basically, it must, you can only bond for things that are bricks and mortar or long term. We think that it's time we relook at this policy. I don't know that that will happen quickly, but I think that it's time to have the conversation. If we're going to be able to eliminate state government costs, we're going to have to leverage technology to make that happen. In order, for example, to solve the fact that in one county they're using a DOS-based system, in another county, they're using completely different programs. Our agencies are not set up, and their technological infrastructure is not set up to talk horizontally across domains. For us to make the dramatic, exponential strides that we so desperately need to make as we look at our budget structure going forward, as we look at our structural budget deficit, we're going to have to use technology as the driver of that engine. Right now, our hands are tied as to how to fund that. So what I have before you is a bill to allow the use of technology for in the bonding process. So before we talk more about that, I would like to call my testifiers to the table so that they may share their wisdom. First, I'd like to ask Gopal Khanna, our Chief Information Officer for the State of Minnesota.
Okay, before we do that, I just want to see if there's any questions of the author. And one question I just want to double check, because you've referred basically to some local governments and possibly even schools. It does allow public debt to be contracted. So if this constitutional amendment were to pass, it would be not just the state of Minnesota, it would be any unit of government that would be able to, it has a bonding authority to do that, I'm assuming, but maybe your testifiers can clarify that. Senator Bonhoff, do you happen to know the answer to that? Or?
Mr. Chair, I would let counsel.
Well, Mr. Bonner stepped away
that,
for
that
second,
is yeah. My understanding, Mr. Chair,
okay.
But that is the author's intent.
Okay. Well, we'll see what happens in the test. Go ahead, Mr. Khanna.
Mr. Chairman, members, for the record, my name is Gopal Khanna. I'm CIO for the state of Minnesota. I represent the Office of Enterprise Technologies, the state's lead agency on policy matters pertaining to information technology, as well as a service organization for government entities, both in the executive branch as well as outside within the state. The grand challenge before us as a state is that the current construct of government operations as we know it, upon which our government services are rendered, is a construct of the 50s and the 60s during the peak of the brick and mortar construct of operations. And it was a very streamlined, high-performing organizational structure which served the citizens in line across the window. However, some 60 years later, citizens like to be served online. They expect information and data available to them all the time, anywhere and everywhere. Our government workforce needs the tools to serve the citizens effectively and efficiently. Given that challenge, the opportunity before us is over the next few years to migrate our operational infrastructure and make it citizen-centric, effective, and efficient. Information technology has been a big tool and a proven tool for our private sector, major companies, to take their operations and turn them around and gain global advantage. Likewise, the challenge before us is to find ways to invest in technology in a very prudent way so that we can migrate our environment into a high-performing, effective, citizen-centric environment. Given that, the key to achieving that goal would be to find sustainable funding mechanisms to fund the transition. I laud Senator Bonner for her efforts to find alternate ways to fund these technology investments that would be required over the next 5 years and longer. While technology is changing rapidly, we need to be aware of the fact that investments have to be made continuously, and there are different kind of tools that are needed to provide investment strategies. 2 years ago, working in collaboration with MMB and various stakeholders, we did a long study which resulted in publishing a white paper called The IT Funding Strategies for the 21st Century, Building a Comprehensive Array of Investment Tools. It was published by OET, provided to all the legislators. If you need another copy, Mr. Chairman, I'll be delighted to submit another one to you. But in that, we looked at 9 different tools that need to be made available for making investments happen. Bonding is one of those tools that can be of enormous value and is something that we need going forward to support our investments in the digital infrastructure build-out of the state. There are others as well, and they all have their pros and cons and merits and demerits depending upon the situation at hand. Obviously, when it comes to bonding, long-term investments are best suited, but at the same time, there are also issues and challenges with it. Of course, there's an interest cost, but that interest cost and or the definition of the current definition of IRS, which says all the public IT systems may last up to 12 to 15 years, IRS basically says the useful life of technology is typically 3 to 5 years. So that poses some challenges as to how bonding as a tool can be used. And we've discussed some of those pros and cons in our report. By the way, as a result of our work here in Minnesota, the National Association of State CIOs, of which I had the great honor of being the president of last year, conducted a similar study looking at all the other states, and what they found out was that 9 states were using bonding in some way to support their investments in technology. And that report, too, by the way, can be made available to you if you should so desire. The bottom line is that while we are looking at the pros and cons of bonding for whatever the investment opportunities might be in the future, we've got to look at it in the context of the value on investment. In the past, when we have made investments in technology, we always talk about ROI, return on investment, which is a classic model talking about what is the dollar return. But going forward, when we invest in technology, we have got to think in terms of what is the total value proposition, and that can be decomposed in 5 key components. One is for security reasons. Investments need to be made in our infrastructure just to make sure that we protect the data and information of the citizens and the state. The second reason would be for providing productivity gains and improvements so that as the baby boomer generation ages and leaves the government workforce, that we can do more with less. The third reason, the third value proposition, comes from making our services more citizen available. As more and more citizens want online services, we have to make investments to create that kind of an infrastructure. The fourth is in the area of cost avoidance, which can be very significant because if we continue delivering the services that we are, the cost of operations will go up, not go down. So we have to make investment just to realize that benefit. And finally, for transparency and accountability and open government reasons, as the demand pull comes from the citizen and public for making government more available, technology platform can make that happen. Bonding is one of those critical array of tools that we must have at our disposal and would help going forward as we look our journey in Minnesota over the next 5 to 10 years to invest in the digital infrastructure and prepare our government to serve the citizens better. Thank you for having me, and I appreciate the opportunity to...
Well, Mr. Khanna, of course, if we didn't have this budget crisis right now, we could just pay cash for the technology that we need, and we wouldn't need bonding authority. I think the reason why, you know, it's being proposed is the fact that I think there's a desire to have the technology systems, and if we can't pay for them, this is looked at as a different way. Bond Council, I think, right now says that you can't use bonding authority to do this. But it also means, as you indicated, well, if you might be paying for something that may have a lifespan of 3 to 5 years, but you may be paying for it over the next 20 years after the technology becomes obsolete, which is different from bonding for buildings or some of the other things that we wind up doing. So is that the best public policy to basically, you know, you use bonding dollars for something that may have a fairly short shelf life, Mr. Khanna?
Mr. Chairman, members, if you go to our report that was, presented to the legislature in 2008, January, it points out the pros and cons of all of these investment array of investment tools, and one of them happens to be bonding. So, yes, we will, where applicable, use general funds to fund IT projects, and in other cases, we may use purchase-lease arrangement, as we have done this past session, to fund the SWIFT project. So there are different tools available for different kind of investments. The challenge before us is that we need to have an array of tools available to us to really make the transformation that is needed in the basic digital infrastructure of government.
And Mr. Chair?
Simboff.
Mr. Chair, I would assert that assuming that a building, while it may have a 25-year potential for its use to the state government, given how fast we are changing and how quickly our system is moving to a web-based structure, that while those buildings may be there for 25 years, they may not be of use to us. We may actually be spending our dollars more wisely to invest in the kind of technological infrastructure that would make us not need to invest in bricks and mortar. So I think it's a different mindset, and that's why I appreciate having the conversation.
Cyril Sheen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Reading on 2.7, it talks about authorized by political subdivisions. So that's like, let's say a county needed to upgrade their 800 megahertz radio system. If this bill were to pass, then my understanding is they could bond for that, or would that have to be part of the state bond, or could they bond individually for that?
Mr. Bodden, the question that came up, I raised the question earlier. The bill provides for public debt to be contracted, but apparently, if I focus on lines 2.7, 2.8, if this were to pass, it would allow not only the state to use bonding money for technology systems, but also political subdivisions, because it says permitted by FG and I and J, which is J there. So this would allow local units of government to do this, Mr. Bonner?
Mr. Chairman, the existing language in the Constitution that you see on line 2.7 basically says the political subdivisions may engage in the works permitted under those specific clauses. I don't read it to mean that they can issue bonds to pay for that, but that is slightly outside my area of knowledge. You might need to talk to Mr. Watson about that component. I think it's clear the way the bill and the amendment are drafted that the state would be able to issue the bonds and allow local governments to use the proceeds to pay for these items.
But it's not clear whether this accomplishes that. So, but again, it's outside your expertise. We'll have to find out for sure. Thank you.
Thank you.
Any other questions of Mr. Khanna? Senator Quibley.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Khanna or Senator Bonner, I guess I'm wondering, you know, that if you succeed in moving this through the process, how will it affect, you know, kind of our self-imposed limit on bonding? And, you know, I guess I also wonder that you know, well, I guess Mr. Bodden was saying that currently we can't bond for this kind of thing, but yet we can, we could change the law so that it would be allowed. But, you know, I guess I'm wondering, why isn't a proposal like this, you know, try to follow a different tack rather than adding on top of bonding when we already have a bonding bill that we seem unable to pass?
Mr. Chair and Senator Kubley, if I had my way, I would move projects to the top of the list that had the ability to enhance the delivery of quality services to the public, that would invest in technological infrastructure that would, over time, reduce the structural deficit. And so I would hope that in the bonding committee, those projects would rise to the top ahead of some more projects that have less significance to the overall well-being of the state.
Well, Ms. Chair and Senator Bonoff, having been on the bonding committees in both chambers at this point, I think your concerns are well taken, and maybe you could get the votes to pass that, and maybe you couldn't. But if you couldn't, you know, it seems to me that you would revert to some of the same kinds of things that are currently going on, where, you know, some things have to be included that you would probably not prefer to have there, just in order to get the 60% of the votes you need to pass a bill. You know, that's one of the problems, of course. But, you know, I guess, do you have an idea on, you know, what kind of impact it would have on our self-imposed limit on the amount of bonding that we're willing to do as a legislature?
Mr. Chair and Senator Kubley, I would not at all advocate to go beyond the current limits that we have, because that has to do with our overall bond rating, and I would not be for that at all. I'd be for living within our means, certainly, and allowing the voters a chance to express whether or not they would like to use this tool as a potential for funding the future needs, you know, from the technology perspective. But I do have, you know, as I mentioned, two other testifiers that might be useful to hear from.
One more question, Mr. Chair. And Senator Bonoff, so your intent then, this wouldn't just be an open invitation for bonding. It would still be something that would have to go through the legislative process.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Thank you.
Senator Lieber?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Bonoff, kind of following the same line of questioning that Senator Kubley offered, can't we bond in the existing bonding bill with this as a focus? Couldn't we take this as an infrastructure development for the state?
Mr. Chair, Senator Limmer, we cannot. I have worked very hard to try and find a way to circumvent that ruling from bond counsel, but we have very clear opinions and definitions around what we can bond for, and right now technology is not something that qualifies without a constitutional amendment change. So again, I'm not attempting to circumvent the current committee structure, nor that process, nor the legislature's power in determining how our dollars are spent. This merely allows the public to vote on whether or not the projects under consideration ought to include technology.
Mr. Chair, Senator Bonoff, so this is not recognized as a separate bonding
Mm-mm.
bill for technology. It would be
Mm-mm.
an inclusion in the existing bonding authority in the state of Minnesota, pending a legislative approval of such a bill. if passed, I'm wondering how much it would change the relationship between public contracts, public offerings of services that may be provided by the private sector. Are we, if we do this, would we be taking place of a private sector installing this type of technology for fees or services, or would it, or contract? Or would we be the one? It'd be similar to like state of Minnesota putting up all the telephone poles in the state of Minnesota, that type of infrastructure. Well, that isn't the way they came here. The corporation, Ma Bell, put them in. And then with changes in the telephone industry, the infrastructure is an internalized thing by the corporations. It's not owned by the state of Minnesota.
Mr. Chair, Senator Limmer, we would, if we determined that we wanted to have one of our bonding projects be to have all of our, you know, systems be on the same platform across all of the administration, you'd have to ask Mr. Connell whether or not he would need to do an RFP or whether he's got that capacity and what these, you know, every project has a cost. So, Mr. Connell?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Kubli, members, Senator Limmer, members, from OIT's perspective, I see this us being funding source agnostic, because once the funds are provided for IT investment, we go through the same process of looking at public-private partnerships to optimize our know-how within the state and bring the best possible solutions. So I'm not quite sure, and I'm not quite an expert, especially in this area, but I could do some more research. But my sense is that it should not in any way diminish our current way of operating, which is with very strong public-private partnership, bringing solutions.
Mr. Chair and Senator Bonoff, I guess it begs the question, if this were to pass, the question I would have is, are we as a state and a government, are we continually going down the path where we provide services that the public, the private sector is already offering? And why would government get in the way and take the place of what the private sector is already offering? This seems to justify that.
Mr. Chair, Senator Limmer, I don't see the pertinence of that concern. What I'm looking at is the need to invest at a much greater level than we have had capacity up to this point in our technological infrastructure so that we can reduce the overall spending of government, increase efficiency, and enhance quality. I believe that who will service us will be mostly out in the public. I mean, we don't have the capacity to do all that internally. I have Peter Lindstrom from the High Tech Association here to say they are strong supporters of this and that other states are going in this direction. It's merely expanding what we look at as long-term value for the state of Minnesota, which is partly what defines what we can bond for.
Okay, before we go, Senator Jungbauer, Mr. Bonner, do you have a clarification on the applicability of this as it appears before us to local government?
Mr. Chairman, I did have the chance to consult with Mr. Watson, and basically the short answer is that standing alone, the amendment would not permit political subdivision to contract debt for these items. It would require an additional law passed by the legislature. This would make such a law constitutional, and when you read the language in line 2.7, it makes sense in light of that. As authorized by law, the political subdivisions may engage in the works, including these new systems, permitted by those paragraphs, and contract the debt, therefore. So it requires a separate statute or other law to authorize the local governments to issue the debt.
Yeah, they just couldn't do it themselves. The legislature have to approve it. Okay. Senator Jungle.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I guess, to Senator Bonner, first, the reason we can't pay cash for some things is because we all have disagreements on what are the functions of government and what should taxpayers' money go to. So as long as we have those fights, we may never get down to the core functions of government, making that more efficient. But having said that, this probably would go to Mr. Connor. We talked about nine other states creating capacity in terms of bonding. We had a number of issues in Energy Committee where we created the ability to sell bonds. And either the market wouldn't buy the bonds because they were too risky, or the market just didn't see fit for the bonds, or even when you could sell the bonds, the way they were set up, nobody used the money properly. So in these other states, do we have information from the bond markets as to what kind of rates, what kind of risk, or specific items within technology that they will actually buy into to have that bond market available?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Jungbauer, members, I don't have that detailed information in front of me. However, the National Association of State CIOs had conducted a study, and I'm sure through them we can obtain that information. Different states use bonding for different projects. Massachusetts has one strategy, and another state may have a different approach to how they manage and bundle their IT assets. Oklahoma has bonded for their data center consolidation. So every state may have a different strategy, and we'll be delighted to get you that information. I don't have that handy.
Senator Barr?
Well, I think, Mr. Chair and Mr. Khanna, I think we need that information because, for example, members, if the bond community feels that this is such a high risk that the rates are high, that might be the best information to bring back to the legislature to get money spent up front on these things, as opposed to paying a higher interest rate for something that's riskier in the bond market when we're funding. So I think it's important we have that kind of information. To the extent you can get it for us, that would be great.
Mr. Chairman, I apologize for coming in late, but I think this is an excellent idea and it needs to be done, but I do have a concern that there's so much demand right now for bonding dollars, because I'm on the bonding committee, and this will allow a lot more projects to be eligible. So I am really concerned if we continue to stick to this $1 billion ceiling for our bonding bill, that we're just not going to be able to fit more of these projects in, especially as, you know, once you do a regional project, then everybody else comes in and says, well, you funded theirs, you should fund ours now. Yeah, I think we're going to have to look at not being so strict with that cap if we're going to be able to fund some of these projects, too.
Okay, Senator Rust?
Senator Rust, I think it's a wonderful idea, and it's one that, I don't know if I'm on this bill or not, but it's one I certainly support and considered doing before. I do recall Representative Kahn saying, we don't have to pay attention to the Constitution, just bond for it.
Yes, she has said that.
She has said that. But I think that what we're doing is making, is not blinking at the Constitution, but indeed looking to the Constitution for support. And we're making the Constitution, being a modern document, if you will, and dealing with our modern high-tech society and not back in the early 1900s. I mean, we're making this a 21st century change,
right,
that recognizes how far we've come and that we can deal in a responsible way in the future. And I think that Senator Pappas, that the notion of the competition for the bonding dollars, it may be that some of the bricks and mortar things could be are not the most necessary things to have our state government and state institutions operate in the most efficient, cost-effective way, and that technology systems could reduce the need for that. And I think we've seen that somewhat in the moving forward in trying to reduce the number of data centers, for example, that we have. And I think that that exercise of going over and seeing that activity in Centennial makes me even a stronger supporter of something like this.
We do have two other witnesses, former Senator Kelly SP and Peter Lindstrom. So welcome back.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Steve Kelly. I'm the director of the Center for Science, Technology, and Public Policy at the Humphrey Institute of Public Affairs, and I appreciate Senator Bonhoff inviting me to come and talk with the committee about this important bill. Our center hasn't studied this, and I'm here in really my capacity as a private citizen, since the university doesn't have a position on this, as far as I know. I wouldn't want to be taken as representing anything, any position by the University of Minnesota. But I just want to say a couple things about my observations from having tried to do technology policy investments during my time in the legislature, that there are certainly opportunities for saving money, as Senator Ress pointed out, for example, we've known for 10 years that if we consolidated data centers, we could save a lot of money, and we still haven't done it. And I think Commissioner Khanna has worked very hard to try to lock up some money to do it, but in this kind of budget environment, reserving cash for those kinds of investments is very hard to do. And that isn't to undercut any of the comments that members of the committee have made about how tough it is to bond for things given the competition for bonding dollars. But it does, the passage of this constitutional amendment would open up another tool to the state and to local subdivisions, to the extent the legislature authorizes it, to bond for longer periods of time. And I think, as council and some members have pointed out, just passage of this amendment doesn't solve the problems. You still have to pass a portion of the public finance law to govern how this is done, and you do have to pay attention to the private market, especially in the sense that you don't have to issue bonds for 20 years because that's what we do for buildings. You can issue bonds for various terms. The key issue is being able to carry debt over the end of the biennium, which is what this section of the Constitution deals with. And so I think that you can market bonds in a variety of lengths to match the kind of capital investment that we're talking about here, and it's going to vary. Data centers involve a lot of big servers and some core licenses, and portions of the building could be bonded for 20 years, and then the equipment at different lengths. So there's lots of different approaches to this. Senator Bonhoff's proposal simply opens the door to more work, and it also obviously will require the political will to actually do the consolidating that needs to be done, or to change business processes to accomplish the kinds of efficiency goals that Senator Bonhoff was talking about in terms of agencies working together horizontally and then the state working more effectively vertically with, for example, school districts. The school interoperability framework has the potential for providing more continuity among school districts and with the State Department of Education, but you still need the political will to do it after you have the financing tools in place to accomplish it. And I think with respect to Senator Limmer's question, the state already runs substantial information technology assets. So we are not talking about taking things back from the private sector, and we are talking about what is the most cost-efficient way of doing the things that we're doing now. And this, and the legislature has asked Commissioner Khanna to look at issues of outsourcing with respect to IT. But one of the important advantages of Senator Bonhoff's bill is that, in general, the state has lower costs of capital than the private sector. So if we're building the data center, arguably, we can get that data center cheaper than a private sector enterprise that has to borrow or obtain financing at private sector rates. So there are advantages to the state being able to use our cost of capital to acquire this information technology rather than to pay the private sector for using their borrowing capacity in order to accomplish these goals. Mr. Chairman, I appreciate the opportunity and be happy to answer any questions.
And I don't know if I did ask you to identify yourself off the record, but you are.
He did.
Okay. Just to know. Okay. And Senator Pappas wondered why I called you Kelly SP, because we also had a Kelly RC here, and we wanted to make sure we didn't confuse the two. So.
That's right. I was trying to think who the other Kelly was.
Yeah. Okay. Any
Mr.
questions
Chairman?
Of Mr. Kelly? Okay.
Mr. Chairman, did they cover earlier the life of the bonds, usually for technology? Because I had that as a question, and I don't know if they've been asked.
the life of the bonds for technology?
Mr. Chair and Senator Pappas, what Steve just talked about is that we generally bond, say, for 20 years, 25 years, but that, in fact, you could tailor the life of the bonds to a shorter term if so desired.
To meet the life of the technology. Okay, thanks.
Okay. Any other questions? Okay, Mr. Lindstrom, welcome to the Budget Division. Please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Peter Lindstrom. I'm the Vice President of Public Affairs for the Minnesota High Tech Association. We have 350 corporate private sector members, and we're all about promoting the global competitiveness of Minnesota's technology economy. I can tell you that this is a national trend. There are nine states currently that can do this. Massachusetts is seen as the leader for many technology things, this being one of them. I can tell you that just in the last year or two, they have used bond proceeds to bond for completely upgrading their Department of Revenue systems. They use bond proceeds to completely upgrade their Department of Motor Vehicle systems. So as the previous testifiers stated, this is another tool in the toolbox that the state can use to upgrade their information technology systems to make the state more user-friendly, more cost-efficient, more productive, and more secure, and our members fully support it. Thank you.
Okay, any questions, Mr. Lindstrom? Members, you also have a preliminary fiscal note for this bill. As you can see, the only projected cost would be by the Secretary of State's office, and they apparently would be absorbing that cost. So there would not be a fiscal impact if this bill is to be adopted. Any questions? And Ms. Senator Bonoff, is there anybody else who's here who wants to be heard on the bill, Senate File 2750? Senator Roebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Bonoff, I'm supporting your proposal. The only concern I have is that who is going to be out advocating it for in the public? It's not an issue that's going to really catch on with any particular group, and I'm wondering if you have a plan for educating voters about what this is and why it might be important.
Mr. Chair, Senator Roebling, that raises a very good question and one that has been shared by the members in the House as well, because their concern is, what if we do this and we fail? Then will we be limited in using bonding in the future? And so I think that it does fall upon the business community, the High Tech Association, the Minnesota Chamber, the Minnesota Business Partnership, to be willing to be our partners in that. And I would be meeting with those groups and would hope that others would join me in asking them to be strong advocates, because it is the difference between us being competitive economically as a state and not. And I think it is that important for our future, and so I'm hopeful the business community will step up the way they have done on other ballot campaigns, the way they did the Vote Yes campaign. And I have gotten very strong support, indications of support, but I can't sit here and tell you that they'd be at the table. I think if we're the committee to pass this, that would send them a strong signal, and I would pledge to you that before going to the floor, I would be having those conversations.
Senator Rest.
Can I move the bill?
Sure.
I move the bill.
Okay, Senator Rest moves that Senate File 2750 be recommended to pass to the Finance Committee. For further discussion on that motion? Hearing none, those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion prevails. Thank you, Senator Bonoff.
Thank you.
The next item is also a bill from Senator Bonoff. It's Senate File 2506, a capital project funding report on jobs created or retained. Senator Bonoff.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm bringing forward a controversial bill that I don't expect to get passed, and I sit here really quite disappointed that is my assessment of the prognosis for this bill. And so I just want to share with you the rationale for why I'm carrying it and why I think it is so important. Let's start with the stimulus bill that the federal government passed, and recall the amount of controversy over whether or not that bill did what it was promised to do. You know, the people said it was going to create this many jobs. No, this many jobs. And then it was, well, did it create that many jobs? Well, I think your facts aren't right. And so, you know, going back, there we were on the Senate floor when Senator Michelle stood up and said, you know, well, members, you talk about creating 20,000 jobs. I want to know, is this really going to do it? And we should have an amendment that says we must track it. And I remember supporting that amendment, but saying, Senator Michelle, in fact, I have a bill that says the very thing, that says that if we're going to do the bonding bill, we should also have a report on the jobs created or retained so that we do have transparency to the public, so that we say to the public, this isn't just talk, but in fact, this is how many jobs we've created. So I assumed that I would have a lot of support for this bill. I assumed that people from labor who are, you know, very insistent that we pass the bonding bill would be sitting next to me at the table saying, please do this. I assumed we'd have MMB sitting at the table saying, we want to provide this detail. This is very important. I assumed that the Department of Admin would say, it's incumbent upon us to have transparency and to be able to go to the public and tell them what we're actually accomplishing. In fact, as you can see, I have no testifiers sitting with me. Nobody did come forward to say they had a desire to pursue this. MMB said that it would be very difficult, that we don't, in fact, talk horizontally among our agencies, that each administration area would have to add it up. It would be very costly for them to track it, figure out how much these jobs are really worth. And as you can see, you've got a fiscal note of $500,000 for this effort. So it doesn't seem reasonable to me. I would hope that you might all consider that we pass it and go back and say there has to be a way to get this done in a less expensive fashion. If we're going to pass a billion-dollar bonding bill, I think we ought to be able to say what we're accomplishing from it. So I bring this to you as a bill, a request for consideration, and I don't have the solution for how to get it done.
Well, Senator Bonoff, you mentioned the federal stimulus funds, and the federal government did provide the money, but they didn't provide, for instance, any money to audit that the money was actually being spent the way it was. We just had to find it out of our own budgets to do that. And they also required a lot of detailed reporting, not only by publishing the information on websites, but back to the federal government on how many jobs were being created, how much it was being used, and so forth. And there was no money within the federal stimulus money to do that. The states just were told to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And so it is a little interesting to see what kind of a fiscal note that was generated on this one. You know, I mean, sending this forward to the Finance Committee doesn't mean the Finance Committee is going to find the money. I mean, because I've got about a zero budget target right now here. So, Senator Jungbauer?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Bonoff, I will be by your side fighting for something like this. And it really kind of goes back, members, to what Senator Bonoff said earlier. If we're really talking about visibility in government, and this isn't rocket science, we ought to have been doing this for years. We should know how many FTEs it takes to put down a lane mile of road. For bridges, I mean, I've talked to a lot of road people and bridge people, and it was amazing to me. There's a huge bridge in North Dakota, and I don't remember what it was in terms of millions, but it was hundreds of millions of dollars and actually only required seven people to do the project over a period of about 2 years that they were doing this bridge replacement. So we don't know if we're getting even a good deal on things if we don't know how many people it takes or what kind of jobs are created and what, you know, what peripheral things are going on there. So I think it's a great bill. I think if we really believe in government visibility, and I think people on both sides of the aisle do, it's good for all people to have something like this move forward. Like you say, Senator Betzold, we don't have the money today, but I think we need these conversations to keep going and things like this to move forward.
Senator Roebling.
Mr. Chair, and you know, one of the things that I think we could do, Senator Bonoff, and I am a co-author on your bill, is why wouldn't we ask in the bid specifications for the contractors to give us the information on how many jobs are on each of their projects. I mean, I would think that they could give us a pretty good idea. Part of it will be their payroll. Part of it will be their subs payroll. That would be a really inexpensive way to do it without maybe the state having that. They would have to collect it, but I would think that in the bid specifications, it could just be part of the bid request. And it shouldn't have state people out there counting employees. We ask them to do that for us.
Sir Pappas.
Well, Mr. Chairman and members and Senator Bonoff, I got these figures from MinSCU and the university when we did the bonding bill. So, you know, the university had even a more extensive, they had the, what do you call that?
Spinoff,
thank you. They also had the spinoff jobs. But I think MinSCU gave me a figure of, on average, one job for every $50,000 that is spent in the bonding bill. And so we had, I mean, that sounds like a lot, except you're getting a building out of it as well.
That's not realistic. That's about a three-month job.
They charge you $500,000?
No. You know, well, so I don't know why this is so difficult to get, this information.
Well, Senator Bonoff, I think Senator Roebling brings up a very good point. I mean, you can build that into the bid process. Let me also point out that, I mean, when your bill was introduced, it was sent to the Finance Committee, okay? This budget division, no budget division ever has any bills, so it's sitting in a file cabinet in the Finance Committee office. So at any point in time, if the Finance Committee wanted to bring this up and discuss it, they could do that. You know, we technically don't pass or kill bills in budget divisions because the Finance Committee owns the bill. So you've got a choice. I mean, if you wanted to try to, you know, work on, you know, some options to try to, you know, make it more budget neutral, that's fine. Otherwise, we could just let it sit in the Finance Committee. And if, for whatever reason, Senator Cohen, the Finance Committee, were to decide to just go ahead to notwithstanding the fiscal note, the Finance Committee has that option. But, you know, I'm in a position where this budget division, I don't think I can just forward the bill as is with a recommendation, you know, to pass it to the Finance Committee unless we've dealt with the fiscal note, which I don't know that we're in a position to do it. And I just, ignoring the fiscal note is not something that they authorize me to do at this level. Mm-hmm. Sir Bonoff.
Mr. Chair, if I were to go back and work with MMB and the chair of the bonding committee to include a requirement that in the bid process this information is collected and bring that back, would this committee reconsider the bill?
Yeah.
What do you recommend,
Mr.
Chair?
I can lay it on over. You know, I mean, you know, because, you know, we've got time because of the Finance Committee deadlines are still out there. This is you don't have to worry about policy deadlines here. So if you I can lay it on over. You can see if there's some way you can build the cost into this, and maybe that'll take care of the fiscal note. And if you think you've got something, you know, you can let us know. We can put it back on the agenda and bring it back in here.
Mr. Chair, you do a omnibus bill, and so if I were to do that,
We put together an omnibus bill last year because we had we're one of the budget divisions. I don't know what the plan is this year. I think it's just to be, you know, outlier bills. There might be some sort of a catch-all bill that's going to be assembled to Finance Committee. I don't know if they made that decision yet because they're so busy trying to put together the budget-cutting stuff. So I don't know how it's going to play out, but I don't anticipate that this division is going to have its own freestanding bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I'm happy if you've got something to work on to hear you again, and we can see if there's any difference here. So, okay.
Mr. Chair, that seems fine to me, unless there are members of the committee
any
who would
questions? Is anybody
prefer
else
to do it a different way.
Okay, does anybody want to be, or Senator Pappas?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Bonoff, this is also a likely inclusion in the bonding bill. Did you have any conversations with Senator Langsdorff at all about that? Because we could have done it in the last couple of days when we still had an open bonding bill. It's closed now. Mm. If it gets vetoed and it's open again, we have another chance.
It'll be open again.
Maybe we can just hold it at the desk, and I don't know. Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Bonoff, I actually presented an amendment to the Senate.
I voted for it.
Exactly,
Senator
down
Limmer.
This line. I'm glad you're pursuing it. But we can attempt to put it into bonding bills, but I think there's a significant number of members in the Senate that have told us they don't want to know about really the jobs that are created on a bonding bill. It's just a discussion. It's just a thing to talk about to justify yet another $1 billion of debt. And I think it really, if we ignore that argument, just the argument itself, and look at the public policy, we should be able to tell the people of Minnesota how many jobs our bonding efforts create, especially during a time of an economic crisis. I think this is the most reasonable bill I've seen all year. And all we're doing is gathering information. Why are we so fearful of information?
Well, as I say, there's a fiscal note that goes along with it, and that's what's holding us up right here. So. Okay, Senator Bonoff, you have enough information. And again, trying to do something, the bonding bill right now, as I understand it, they've wrapped up the conference committee report. So if it comes back, when it comes back before the body, it's either vote the bill up, vote the bill down, or vote to send it back to conference committee. I mean, so we can't amend the bonding bill at this stage.
And Mr. Chair, just point of question, if the members of the committee, if you voted to pass this, then what would happen to it? Then it would just go sit in finance?
Well, Senator Bonoff, if we took a vote and sent it to the finance committee, we'd be recommending it to pass. And the first question the finance chair would say to me, okay, and you're proposing to pay for this how? I say, I don't know, I'm just sending it to you. And he'd say, why do I need a budget division to send me stuff that you can't pay for? I mean, you know, we're supposed to try to weed the stuff out at this level. So otherwise, I just shovel everything to them. I wouldn't mind doing that, but they get kind of irritated when I do. So, okay. Any other questions? Okay, well, thank you, Senator Bonoff.
Senator Butzold, what is the intent of the author? Did the author want to have the bill moved?
No, I think we talked about laying it over so she can see if there's any way that she can come back with an amendment to the bill, as Senator Roebling suggested, kind of, if nothing else, build the costs into the bid. That might ameliorate some of the fiscal note that we've got here. I don't know, but, you know, I mean, I think there's a way to approach it to address that. But right now we've got a fiscal note of, $500,000 per year that I don't think we can absorb right now, and we've got to figure out a way to deal with the fiscal note. The policy is fine, but this is a budget division, so we have to look at the fiscal.
Mr. Chair, I would tend to think that knowing the investment of bonding bills and knowing the number of jobs, I think we would get that much money back and more as a result of just a $500,000 investment when it comes to this type of thing. I think we may be missing an opportunity here.
Yeah.
Are you planning on having another meeting before deadline, or do we surpass... Do we go back past deadlines?
No,
Senator
Limmer, since this is a budget division, we're not affected by the policy committee deadlines. Any bill that's, has to clear policy committees by this week or next week, some may go to the floor, some go to the finance committee. This one's straight to the finance committee. So it's basically already meant first and second deadline. So that's not an issue. There will be some other deadlines out there, but no, we've got time here to lay it on over and have Sarbanov come on back and revise a proposal.
Well,
I don't. This did go straight to finance. Kathleen stepped out. Okay, yeah, it must have gone straight to the finance committee. Otherwise, this wasn't heard anywhere else before.
No,
this is the first time it's been heard.
Yes.
Okay.
Well, Mr. Chair,
I
really think that not only you, Senator Bonoff, and others should really consider doing a little bit of polish work on it. I would love to see this go forward. I think it's important, especially when we try to justify our bonding efforts by number of jobs.
Yep.
Yet we don't know exactly what those number of jobs are. And I know I've asked that question, and every time I ask the question on the Senate floor, I get a different answer from the same individual. So. I hope we can raise this again before the end of this, before the session is over, and maybe I would hate to see us lose this opportunity because I really think it's a good tool for us for public policy development.
Well, as I say, I'll lay it over, and if we hear from Senator Bonoff that she's got something that we think we can work with, we'll be happy to put it back on the agenda.
Mr. Chair and committee members, thank you very much. Okay. I will work hard, and it is my intent to pass it this year. Okay. So,
thank you, Senator Bonoff. Then we have Senate File 2386, Senator Metzen, Labor Agreements and Compensation Plans Ratification. Senator Metzen, welcome to the budget division.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Or should I say, welcome to the budget division.
Welcome to the budget.
Oh, I don't have to.
My throat's getting better, so.
You're right, Senate Chairman. This does deal with the state labor contracts ratification bill that deals with about 43,000 state employees. We passed this the other day in Senator Rest's committee. These contracts and compensation plans have been reviewed and given approval by the LCC Subcommittee on Employee Relations. These contracts and plans do not provide any across-the-board increases. No substantive changes were made to the state employee insurance program. Premiums are held constant in the year 2010. The Department of Minnesota Management and Budget estimates that the increased cost of the overall collective bargaining agreements and plans will be 0.057 in this biennium. I could go through, let me just quickly name Minnesota State College faculty, Minnesota State University Administrative Services faculty contract, American Federation of State County Municipal Employees, AFSCME, American Federation of State County Municipal Employees, Unit 8, AFSCME again, Minnesota Professional Employees, MAPE, Management Association, Office of Higher Education, MNSCU Administrators, Commissioner's Plan, Managerial Plan, Minnesota Government Engineers Council, Minnesota Law Enforcement Association, Commissioner's Plan Amendments, Nurses, State Residential Schools Education Association, and MNSCU Administrators Plan, and Commissioner's Plan Amendment. Again, this was... I did not negotiate these plans. They were done by the administration and their people in a collective bargaining process with mostly the union representatives. And this is a mutually agreed upon plan by, again, by the administration and the union representation. So they brought it to me, and it was bargained for in good faith, I believe, and that's the plan before you. There was discussion, I believe, in Senator Rest's committee just a little bit about the second year, but there could be some bumps there, but they're not automatic. They're involved in performance, so and they're not that big of numbers either. So, but it has been bargained for, and I think it's actually the time and period we're in. I think most of us in the room would like to pay people and give them a little boost each year, but we're not in that type of economy, my friends. And I've always been of the opinion that we should pay people, and if at all possible, give them a raise. But that's not going to happen this year, and that's what this bill reflects. Thank you for your help.
And members, you've got a copy of the Subcommittee on Employee Relations of the LCC, and this was first heard and approved by that LCC subcommittee. Mr. Hubinger is here. Mr. Hubinger, did you want to comment?
Mr. Chair and members, I'm Greg Hubinger with the LCC Subcommittee on Employee Relations. I think Senator Metzen has done a fine job of summarizing the contracts and the costs. One point that I might add is that about a third of the cost of these contracts, which is estimated to be about 0.57% this biennium, 1.69% impact on the next, about a third of that cost is an increase in pension contributions by both employers and employees, and is mandated by a law that was passed by the legislature in 2006. So a substantial portion of this cost is outside of the hands of the bargainers.
Yeah. Any questions?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Pappas.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, Senator Metzner, Mr. Hubinger, I noticed under the MNSCU administrators that there still is Subdivision 9, allowances for extra remuneration for achieving specific performance goals. I'm assuming, since it says as providing existing contracts, that this is why that they still would be able to get an increase because they have contracts that are in place, and we can't change those contracts unilaterally, so we would have to look at future contracts if we wanted to make any changes. Is that correct?
Mr. Chairwager.
I did.
Sure. Mr. Chair and Senator Pappas, provision for the additional remuneration is provided in statute and provided in the compensation plan for MNSCU administrators, and that plan allows for individual contracts with presidents and the central office management. Several of those contracts are multi-year, and for that reason, those provisions are continuing.
Okay. And as I recall, if this bill is approved and these contracts are ratified, this completes the cycle of contracts for, I guess, this year. Is that correct? Or this by, or is it a 2-year cycle or 1-year cycle? Or what do you, Mr. Hubinger?
Mr. Chair, if they are 2-year cycles, then this contract. Okay. Except all of the remaining contracts. There was one contract.
We did one last year.
Right. There was one at the end of the session last year. So this completes all the contracts that were outstanding, and there's nothing in the pipeline then. So
that's okay. Correct.
Okay. Other questions? Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair and Senator Metzen, I know you. I respect your work that you have in carrying this bill. You know, in a time when the rest of the population outside of government contracts are experiencing nearly a 10% sustained unemployment rate. And while many people who are still employed have had drastic cuts in their salary, I would tend to think that any increase in anyone's pay regarding state contracts with labor, any contract, I think, of showing an increase in pay is a little too high for the reflection of our times these days. I know families that have had to take their jobs in order to keep their jobs, they have to still work their 40 hours every week, and they take a 30% cut in pay. And we're now increasing. I know the first paragraph or the second paragraph says there's generally no across-the-board increases, but I would say 99% of them are across-the-board increases in this contract. So I want to make sure that whoever wrote this thing out for from the Legislative Coordinating Commission on Employee Relations doesn't get too aggrandized in the definition that simply because there's no across-the-board increases, that's face value. There's a $40 million hit here. And as much as I can be sympathetic to the labor families that are involved in this contract, I'm also we should reflect some of what we do based on what's happening in the real world outside of state government. And that is, there's a lot of pain and agony out there, and it seems like this state just wants to continue raising expenses, raising our indebtedness in order to solve some of our problems. And we still don't have enough money to fix it. So I can't let this just quietly go by and not bring this subject up and reflect the real mood of what's going on in our state.
Senator Metzen?
Yeah, I just want to, I didn't want to use the term, but the Republican administration bargained for these, not me. I'm carrying the water.
I understand.
These are negotiated contracts, and I didn't have anything to do with them. But I agreed with the 0%, and I really do, but times are this tough. But so, again, I didn't negotiate them, and apparently they hope they acted in good faith. Back and forth, and so that's where we're at. I just think that this is the best we could do, and I think a lot of departments are either frozen too. And I know, like the Minnesota Senate and some other areas of government, have frozen folks. So I think that's going on in some of these areas too. So it's not like everybody's just hiring people out there. Is that kind of correct? A lot of our departments, I'm not sure of all of them, said, hey, no more employees. If they go through attrition, we're not adding more people. I know, like the Senate, for example, is down, I believe, Senator Betzel, what, 15 or 20 people in the last 2-3 years, so we're kind of trying to do our job around here, too, you know, so.
Sarah Pappas?
Mr. Chairman, I guess I feel the exact opposite to Senator Limmer. I think this shows amazing restraint and a really strong desire to avoid layoffs. You know, health costs, co-payments, all that stuff keeps going up. And where we may officially not have inflation, we have spotty inflation here and there, you know, fuel costs, whatever. So when I look through this and I see no across-the-board salary increases in either year, no step increases in either year. No across-the-board salary increases, no step increases. You know, no across-the-board salary increases, no step increases in the first year. I mean, it just goes on and on and on. I think it's an amazing agreement that the unions came to the table with the administration and said, you know, we really want to avoid layoffs and we want to keep our brothers and sisters employed and working for state government. And I think this is just, you know, in some cases we're even seeing a drop, you know, besides the, you know, piddly little 0.28%, we're seeing some less money. Personnel plan for Minsku administrators, -169,000. Minsku State College faculty, -1,526,000. And that's probably an indication of they have less. They have less administrators, right?
Ms. Eller?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Pappas, as I read
less
this
faculty.
Senator Pappas, as I read this bill, and oh, by the way, Senator Metzen, I don't mean to cast any dispersions on you. You and I have a very good, professional, and friendly relationship.
Absolutely. I agree with that.
And my comments are not directed at you. I know you're carrying the bill on behalf of the administration and others, and I don't envy your task on this one, but at the same time, this message, if the ears of the administration are open and listening to this, this is directed, my comments are directed to them as well.
Okay.
And as I look at the, at least the summary of this bill, you know, the comments that have said about no increases, no step increases, but I can't help to look at subdivision 1 through subdivision, at least through 16, we see a constant reference to 4% increases, 2.7, 2.9, 3.6, 3.5, 30% additional remuneration for chancellors, vice chancellors, and presidents of Minsku positions, 3.5%, 4%, 3.9, 4%, 3.4%. I mean, it's chock full of increases. And anyone that thinks that this is not, that this is a revenue neutral or something that's not across the board, well, it's near close. And I think the facts stand on their own that this is an increase for almost everybody. So having said that, I know we have to move on.
Sir Robley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And, you know, we have heard the statistic a number of times that our average income in the state of Minnesota has dropped 10%. And so has our revenue on income taxes. And at a time when people in the private sector are seeing that kind of a decrease in their income, I think that we shouldn't be seeing any increase in income for people who are being paid by those same taxpayers. And so I really respect those bargaining units that came forward and said they won't take any increases. The Minnesota State College faculty, the Minnesota State University Association of Administrative and Service Faculty, they were two of them that took nothing for increases, and I certainly admire and respect that and realize that they were trying to save jobs because they have taken some big cuts in funding in their areas. It is still a $40 million increase, and I know Mr. Hubinger said that a third of that is for
pensions,
so I suppose about $13 million of it is, so maybe about $27 million is an increase in pay. But it still builds a problem for the next biennium. It's still going to cause further, I mean, even as you look further out, if we continue to, if we don't step back at some point, it builds on itself, of course, every year. So 1% may not sound like a lot, but then the next time, you know, it'll be 2% onto that, and the next contract or 3% or, you know, whatever. It always builds on itself. But it's just, it's so hard to go back and tell our constituents, well, they're experiencing an average of 10% decrease in their income, that, you know, state workers are held harmless in general and will get an increase next year. And I struggle. I have an amendment, actually, that would ratify just those contracts that have no increases. It would be in Subdivision 1 and 2 in particular for the state faculty, state university faculty, and then reject the others. However, Mr. Hubinger explained a dilemma that might cause. I don't want to further complicate matters, because we would apparently, without ratifying these contracts, go back to the original contracts, which have the step increases in them for both years. So we're in a bad spot. I would like to reject them and have them go back to negotiate, but I don't know if the unions would want to negotiate, because without negotiating, they get the step
increases.
They're
better off.
Mm-hmm. They're better off, Mr. Chairman, the members.
If we reject this, they're better
off. They're better off. So.
Right. And so I'd still like to send a message that we shouldn't be increasing any salaries right now. I'm not quite sure how to do it, but I'm frustrated. I wish that we had negotiated these differently. And you know, we're always so on the back end of things. And these contracts took effect July 1st, and here it is, middle of March, and we're first getting a look at them. And so it almost seems insignificant that we even have to ratify them, because they've already taken effect. But I am frustrated, and I don't know that offering the amendment would do any good. But I just want to express my congratulations to those unions that did look at the big picture, the few that did, and wish that they all had. And it's not that we don't want to compensate employees, but when we see what's happening in the private sector, we need to have some comparability.
Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. About a year ago, the governor requested some help in trying to balance the budget. He asked all the legislators to give him ideas on how to fix a hole of about $1 billion at that time. This was right before the unallotment phase went into full effect. And I made a proposal reflecting what the reality of our constituents are going through, that maybe every state employee from the governor down, every legislator, everyone, including education, higher, and K-12, would take a cut in pay. Just to reflect what goes on in the real world. And I proposed a 15% cut across everyone's pay scale, which would have come up with about a $930 million fix for the governor's hole of $1 billion. The governor advised me that, sent a message saying that he can't do that because of contracts that were already in existence. When we ratify this one for another 2 years, we will not be able, we'll take that flexibility out of the salary stream as well. So there's two issues. First, the dollar and cent amount of what this represents, but it also means that this agreement goes into effect for another 2 years. So there will be no reflection of what we can do to further tweak the budget. And we've got problems coming in another 11 months when this legislature meets again, and there will be no means to open up at least this area for any type of adjustment. And we've got a far more serious budget hole to fix next time than we do now. So we just need to keep that in mind as we're considering this.
Well, Senator Limmer, it's one thing to ratify what the contract is, but I don't think there's anything in the contract that prohibits layoffs. I mean, if that's what comes next, that's what's come next. I mean, you know, they're trying to negotiate to keep jobs, but, you know, if the axe starts falling and people are let go, this doesn't save them.
Well, Mr. Chair, that's a good discussion point, because there's
we always seem to look at the cold, hard reality of a layoff, and that means there are definite losers in it. We can at least limit the pain if unions were wanting to maybe share the pain with all their brotherhood in the union. Historically, that doesn't happen. It's always the youngest people, the people with the least seniority, are the ones that are let go. And the more senior members stay, I thought by presenting, at least for public discussion, the opportunity to consider if it came to that extreme. If everyone took a cut in pay, no jobs would be lost, nobody would lose their health insurance, and that at least some semblance of stability would still be retained by those families. I think we kind of take that off the table when we ratify.
But, Senator Limmer, do you think that, I mean, suppose in the collective bargaining process, the employee unions had come in and said exactly that. They said, okay, we'll take a cut in pay, but we got to guarantee no jobs will be cut. You won't cut our health insurance. You're going to hold us harmless. Do you think the administration would have ever agreed to that? I don't think the administration could have agreed to that.
I didn't have that further discussion because the conversation stopped with just the quick parameter discussion.
But I think it'd be irresponsible for the administration to have agreed we're never going to cut anything under any circumstances because we don't know what's ahead.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, I was giving options.
Yeah. Senator Pappas.
I was thinking about this. I'm not sure where you get, Senator Roebling, your figure about a 10% salary cut. But there were, for most of the time I've been here, people who worked in the private sector got paid a lot more than public employees did, state public employees. And I think that what our advantage has been in public sector is, first of all, you have people who are dedicated to doing the work for the public, but also it's a sense of security. That if they do a good job, there's a seniority system, they can have an opportunity to advance and be in a more secure position, whereas we know that the private sector has become much more insecure. So I think it's kind of unfair that our public employees have been willing to work for a lower salary all these years to now be mad at them because they're not willing to take a salary cut like the private sector is doing. You know, I think the fact that so many of them have come in with no across-the-board increases, that's really what drives it, is when you have these COLAs. And then also figure the fact that we mentioned pensions, that all of our pension funds are in trouble because of the stock market, and so the employer and the employee are being asked to pay more now for a pension that will remain probably the same because the COLAs on that are being frozen indefinitely. So,
okay, what do you want to do, folks?
I'll move that... Senate file 2386 be recommended to pass, and does it get sent to the full finance committee?
Everything goes to the finance committee from here.
Of course.
It can't go anywhere else.
All right.
Okay. Senator Pappas moves that Senate file 2386 be recommended to pass to the finance committee. Discussion. Hearing none, all in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, motion prevails.
No.
No. I'm sorry. Okay.
You went too fast.
I went too fast. Okay. Okay. So next week we are going to hear from Senator Sheban on assistant voting, counting, and scanning equipment on Monday, and also Senator Rest has legislative auditor costs authorization from Heritage Fund appropriation, so that's on Monday. Okay, anything else?
Thank you, Senator Rustin.
Meeting is adjourned.